next year. Things are gonna change. Gonna drink less beer and start all over again. Gonna read more books. Gonna keep up with the news. Gonna learn how to cook. Spend less money on shoes. I'll pay my bills on time. File my mail away every day. Only drink the finest wine. Call my granny every Sunday with resolutions. Well, baby, they come and go. Will I do any of these things?
Answer's probably no.
Thank you, Jamie Cullum. John Williams here. You're listening to WGN Radio. Isn't that a great song? I'd play all 4 minutes of it. I did a lot of it, I think, last week. And so happy New Year's to you. By the way, Bob, did you make any New Year's resolutions? And are you any good at keeping them?
Well, my one for 2016 I didn't do was to learn to do a backflip. And I didn't learn to do a backflip.
There's always next year. Of course,
but there's always next year.
Isn't getting any younger.
My back is not getting any younger. But I don't consider myself physically agile in the backflip sort of way. I mean, I do exercise. I swim and stuff. So I'm not like not physical, but I'm not a backflip person. So I'd like to
learn
work on that. I'd like to learn how
to
do a backflip.
Is it a panic thing? You just can't convince yourself to flip backwards? I mean,
I can't convince myself to email the guy who can show me, so you might say.
You're a little afraid.
Well, I don't know. I haven't even really, you know, all I did was I got a name of a guy who could teach me, who's a friend of a friend. And that's as far as I got in 2016. I don't lie awake at night saying. So I wonder. I don't really know.
Wow.
I don't know, but I'm curious. So that'll be my 2017.
Heidi Stevens is our first guest. I don't know if she's on the line yet or not. Is she ready to roll? Because I'll weave her into this conversation. Hey, Heidi, are you there?
I'm ready to roll.
Do you know how to do a backflip? Can you do a backflip?
You know, I used to be able to do a backflip. I was a gymnast as a kid. My daughter can do backflips for days. But I've retired my backflipping career.
How was it?
Oh, super fun. I would say, like, maybe start with, can you cartwheel or...
No.
Stand on your head? I mean, there's a couple steps.
Probably kind of stand on my head. Yeah, I don't even know. There might be steps involved. There might not. I don't really know.
What you got to do is get on the edge of a platform or a diving board, and you got to try and kiss your butt. You've got to, like, that's what you do. You stand there, and you go, okay, I'm just going to keep doing it until I kiss my butt, and you'll flip over in the process. There's a million little... I specifically.
You don't need to email that guy. John just taught you how.
I think I've got a good
Forget
coach.
That other
right?
guy's
or,
name.
Or you could kiss my butt. The thing is, I grew up around swimming pools, and so I could sure do a backflip. I could do a 1.5. But I remember my very last backflip that I ever did or will do because my family and a couple of our friends, we all stayed at a big lake house, and everybody got rooms, and we swam out one day to a little platform out on the lake. And I said, watch this. And so I did a backflip into the water, you know, about 3/4 of a backflip. But I did my backflip and landed in. And then I swam back and I thought, wow, something's different in me. And I pulled my back. And that night, we were going for a walk the next day. And suddenly I found myself on my knees. I was on such pain. And I thought, oh, my God, I've heard people describe back pain before. And you go, oh, yeah, it's really terrible. And I went, yeah, whatever. Back pain is the worst thing in the world.
Yeah, just debilitating.
Don't learn to do a backflip, Bob, because it'll only end badly.
I had two years ago, I just got a back spasm kind of out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And I know that where you're just literally, I had to ask someone at the Italy coffee place, can you hand me my bag? I cannot lean down and get
Isn't that terrible?
Yeah.
Heidi Stevens joins us now, not for this reason, though. You read her in the Chicago Tribune. You find her all across the dial. In fact, she was on with Matt Bubala not that long ago, right, Heidi?
I was.
Talking
about
Baby It's
Friday,
Cold Outside.
I think. Yep, we did cover that one.
Not that long ago, you wrote the 10 people that most inspired you, that gave you the most hope for the year ahead. These were people that you met in 2016, and I just thought we'd walk through some of them because it was such an inspiring piece you wrote, and I think so much of the conversation we have, the news we hear, is hostile or negative, of course, and this is quite the opposite of that. So can I walk you through a few of the things you wrote?
Definitely.
You wrote about Shaka Rawls. You said, Shaka Rawls took over as principal of Leo Catholic High School, a 90-year-old all-boys school on the city's far south side in August, and immediately started making plans for a volunteer cleanup day. He got 150 corporations and individuals all around Chicago to volunteer supplies, and people showed up, and they cleaned the inside of the school, right?
Inside of the school, yeah, and did more than clean. I mean, artists were showing up with, like, you know, 6-foot mosaics of President Obama to hang on the walls, and they really beautified the school, which is a kind of a beacon of hope in a neighborhood that has changed a lot, and not always for the positive since the school's opening, but they've stayed, you know, academically rigorous and really a fantastic school. It's got 100% graduation rates. And the school was just kind of surviving a little more on its reputation than Shaka would like. He wants to kind of energize it and bring it into the future. And he wanted to start that by, like, a literally physically clean slate. And so he kind of spread the word that he wanted to do a volunteer cleanup day, and people just showed up in droves. I mean, Method, the cleaning product company, donated like thousands of pounds of cleaning supplies. The Blackhawks donated a bunch of money. A company called Nuance Solutions, that's based on the South Side, donated a bunch of cleaning supplies. Fraternities and sororities showed up, and you know, law firms sent people. It was just a really beautiful day that, more than anything, I think, and what Shaka said, more than anything, made the students feel believed in, you know, like their education was something to invest time and energy in.
Well, that kind of segues nicely to how you wrote about Carolyn Boudreau. You said, took a soul-searching trip around the globe and ended up leaving her corporate gig to launch a nonprofit that funds orphanages in India. And this is such a touching sentence. The ramifications of not having your parents are so vast, she said. If you don't have that basic thing, the world is just going to eat you up. So she reached out to that community. What a good person, huh?
That story was just fascinating. She went on a trip. She took a year off work, and she took a trip around the world with a friend. And they stopped in India. And while they were there, they went to visit. Her friend had adopted a child, you know, through like one of those Save the Children type of organizations. And they went to visit this orphan that she had, I guess, sponsored is a better word. You know, she didn't know the child. She just sort of would send the monthly payments get the updates that the kid was, you know, doing well.
And are those kids real? Do those kids really exist? You can go find them?
Well, this one did. This one really existed. So they went to meet him in person. And when they got to the orphanage, she was blown away by the need. You know, she thought they might run into a dozen kids. They met hundreds of kids, and they were sleeping on, you know, boards with no pillows and blankets, and they were hungry, and they didn't have adults to love them and read to them and do all the things that kids need adults to do. And she just felt like she couldn't forget that experience. She couldn't come home and have that be, you know, something she did and then sort of dive back into her daily, everyday life. And so she quit her gig. She was an account executive for like a TV station, I think, in Texas, and quit that and started this nonprofit. And what they do is sponsor house mothers, Indian women who are willing to serve as house mothers to orphans. They pay their room and board, and then in turn, these women take care of orphans, and they do like a 10-to-1 ratio. So there's one woman for every 10 children, and they give them, you know, the food they need and the medical care they need and the education they need. And it's really a good system. And, you know, people can go on her website, the Miracle Foundation, and donate money. And that's what she's done with her life.
I was going to mention that it's called the Miracle Foundation. And boy, doesn't that sound like a good use of your extra 20, 50, 100 million bucks. What about Audrey Peterman on a mission to make the nation's public lands accessible and accessed by more people of color? I never thought about that.
Yeah, Audrey's a super cool lady. She lives in Florida. I read her book and ended up just, you know, calling her up on the phone. She decided to take a road trip with her husband from their home in Florida all around the country to see more of the public lands, the national parks that they really hadn't seen as kids. And her story resonated with me partly because a couple of years ago, I took a similar trip with a friend of mine who is African-American, who said, you know, she grew up with parents and grandparents who kind of warned her away from going to visit our national parks. You know, she said that black people aren't safe in national parks. The white people don't want you there. That's what she was told all her life. And that was heartbreaking to me. And I grew up with parents who, you know, told me the opposite, go see as many national parks as you can. And so anyway, she and I traveled to the Grand Canyon together and just had a great time. And so then when I read Audrey's book and heard that she and her husband both had a similar experience, you know, of relatives saying, stay away from those national parks, they're not safe. I thought, gosh, this is really something. So called her up and talked to her about that and learned a little bit more. And she said, yeah, you know, there's a long, tragic history in our country, obviously, of mistreatment of people of color. And they've, you know, largely avoided national parks in part because of that and because of not feeling safe there. And she wants to change that. She wants she wants them to learn their contributions to these beautiful lands and to this country as a whole, and also that these places are out there to enjoy and be inspired by, and they're for all of us. Her book and her, she does these speaking gigs going around the country, encouraging people like get out there and see these lands and do your part to protect them. And she's just really cool.
Audrey Peterman and her husband wrote Legacy of the Land, a black couple discovers our national inheritance and tells why every American should care. It's an Earthwise Productions book. There are 10 in Heidi's article that you can Google, 10 people I met in 2016 who give me hope for 2017. Pick one more before I let you go, Heidi, that sort of jumps out at you. I circled about all of them.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, they're all so great. I guess I would talk a little bit about Lily Alter.
I was going to say.
Sophomore, because I just was so charmed by her. She was given an English assignment to write a mock grant proposal in her honors English class, and she decided to write a grant proposal for a campaign to collect money to buy feminine care products for homeless girls and women, because she had read an article once about how hard it is for homeless girls and women when they have their period. They can't afford to go out and buy supplies, and they're often not donated to food pantries in the same way that, you know, food, for example, is. So she did the English assignment, you know, did well on it, and decided, you know, heck, I'm going to actually do this campaign. I'm going to, you know, turn this research into a real project. So she started a GoFundMe and raised thousands of dollars and connected with these two outfits, you know, on the west side and western suburbs to distribute all of the items that she buys with the donations, and they get them in the hands of homeless girls and women. And the last time I talked to her, she was up to $10,000. And, you know, she's 15 years old. So
I know. That's the thing, too.
Her.
You think, well, I'll do that someday. Here's a 15-year-old who said, oh, I think I'll do it now, Lily Alter. High school kid in the area, GoFundMe page. All right, so the whole list is there, and each one is just as inspiring as the other. And if you want to connect with these people, the information is in almost every little paragraph or story. 10 people I met in 2016 who give me hope for 2017, and I'm all for that. Heidi, well done. Thanks for writing that, and thanks for coming on with us. I know you're on break.
Thanks for having me, John.
Stay well.
Yeah, happy New Year.
You too. That's Heidi Stevens in the Chicago Tribune. I'm John Williams. This is WGN. We follow the Donald Trump tweets on the John Williams Show here on WGN. And did you follow them this week? They went like this. Donald Trump had a couple that I thought were interesting. You know, you sort of just sit back and watch them flow out each day and wonder what they mean, parse them for special meaning, parse them for typos, parse them for accuracy. But if you go down that rabbit hole, you'll never come back. So I think it's best just sometimes to let them flow and enjoy them at a distance for the art that they are. For instance, after he noted this week that the Consumer Price Index had passed 113, it was its highest ever, he concluded his tweet with, "Thank you, Donald." And then later in the week, he, of course, praised Vladimir Putin for delaying a response to the United States over this election hack story. It's an interesting story for a lot of reasons. And the Russians aren't retaliating. And Donald Trump patted with Twitter Vladimir Putin and Russia on the back. I went to Trump's Twitter account because I follow him. And I clicked on his followers. You know, he's got... who he's following. He's got about 18 million or 20 million people that follow him. But he only follows himself 40, now 41 people. And I thought, well, who has he added? Because it was at 40, and now it's at 41. Who was the new group that he added? And if you click on who he's following, it's sort of predictable. He follows his campaign. He follows Fox News. He follows Joe Scarborough. He follows, you know, all of his kids, all of his properties. The word Trump appears in probably 30 or 35 of the things that Trump's following. And that's logical, too. He follows Bill O'Reilly. He follows, I'm trying to think of who else is out there. Mark Burnett, the head producer of Apprentice. So, you know, all of it is pretty logical and lines up nicely. But then the one that he's added is Diamond and Silk. Diamond and Silk are those two awesome, black, sassy ladies who are the world's biggest Trump followers. And they post videos, and they've been doing this since, I would say, well, since Trump announced his candidacy. I mean, when they were trying to deflect for him from Marco Rubio, they were already out there. They didn't just get on the bus because Trump was the candidate. They wanted him to be the candidate. And so they, whenever something comes up, they sit in front of their little laptop there and they post a video and they say, "Hey, y'all." And the way it goes is Diamond always gives you the goods. Diamond always says, "Hey, here's the issue." And Silk is always doing the mm-hmm and the finger wave and the head wag. This Israel issue came up that John Kerry was talking about, the whole controversy last week. And here's about 20 seconds of Diamond and Silk. This is their latest video, Diamond and Silk, on YouTube.
"Hey, y'all. Hey. So I'm sitting up watching my TV, minding my business the other day, getting prepared for the new year. And I know that something went down with Israel because I saw Carrie on TV talking about them. Oh. Now, I'm not quite sure as to what went down, but I do know that Carrie must be slipping in all of that Heinz ketchup. Because he tripping.
He tripping.
Let me tell you something.
Tell him.
Israel is our ally. So that means we have to have their backs. I don't care if they back is small and our backs are big.
Yes.
We still got to have their backs.
Period.
And guess what? We stand with Israel. We will always have their back."
Drop the mic. That's time. And Donald Trump follows them, which I'm cool with. I have no problem with that. Why wouldn't you? But I don't want him to give them a cabinet post. I could just see it, a long conference table, the U.S. negotiating with Russia or China or somewhere, and all of those dour-looking faces of diplomats from around the world. You know that scene. And at the end are Diamond and Silk. Uh-huh. Here's how it's going to go. And they would own that room every time. And they are the latest follow. They are 41 of the 40 that the president-elect monitors. It's 1:32. All right, let's monitor the news. That's next here on WGN.
Conversation and thoughts from thought leaders, including entertainment, music, news, money business, and so much more. And the best part is, you run things. WGN Plus, WGN's radio podcast network. Search and download WGN Plus in the App Store.
Bob, I want you to do the news like Diamond and Silk would do it. I want all sass, finger wave, and head wag. Can you do that?
I'll do the gestures. I won't do the voices, but I'll do the gestures. Yeah, so people can watch online.
Right. We'll live stream you or something. If you just if you just Google them and watch, because the visual is really hilarious. They are a joy. I've talked to them before, and they're sincere. They are the world's biggest Trump supporters. Thank you, Bob. This is John Williams. I don't know if you have time to read books over the holiday, but maybe a lot of you do. Maybe you got one for Christmas, or you got some cash. You went out and picked up a book. An author that we'll interview in the near future is a guy named James Hamblin, and he wrote a book, If Our Bodies Could Talk. And just like the title suggests, it's one of those books about human beings and our bodies, and it answers a lot of the questions that these sorts of books do. He writes about why we snore, what is a sunburn, when I shave my hair, does it grow back faster? He writes, if I lose a contact in my eye, could it travel up into my brain? He's a physician and a journalist, and all of these things are things that he's actually looked into before for patients or people. So some of that is just fine, and it's the sort of thing you've read about before. But the book is really better than most of these kinds of books. Some of his anecdotes are just fascinating. He writes about Elizabeth Taylor, who he said had beautiful eyes, not in part because she had at least one extra row of eyelashes. It's a condition known as dystichiasis or dystichiasis. And it can be a sign that you'll actually suffer from early heart failure, among other bad things. After the world fell in love with Kate Middleton, he writes, women started electing for dimple surgery to get dimples inserted into their cheeks, which doesn't always go well and always costs thousands of dollars. But more importantly, he writes about things like multivitamins and should you or should you not take them. And it's really fascinating the way he approaches some of these topics. He writes with confidence about celiac disease and gluten-free products. He writes about the concept of experts disagree and what we should know about that phrase. And then there's a section titled, just as an example of some of the great stories he tells, there's a section titled, Am I Having a Seizure? Again, the book is If Our Bodies Could Talk. It's by James Hamblin. And in that one particular passage, he writes about how people often do have seizures, maybe just once in their life, and they're okay thereafter. That was not the case with Beth Usher, however, a little girl from Storrs, Connecticut, who in 1983, 3 weeks into kindergarten, had a seizure in her class. A couple weeks later, she had a grand mal seizure. A subsequent CT scan revealed a large area of dead brain matter in her left hemisphere. She was diagnosed with epilepsy caused by cerebral palsy. Little Beth began having more seizures. In fact, it got up to 100 a day. She started writing with her left hand and dragging her right foot. She couldn't go to school anymore, and the only relief she would get was from watching Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. Her parents would prop her up, they would turn it on TV, and her seizures would go away when Mr. Rogers was on. But that's no life. After a few months, another CT scan revealed that black void in her head was now spreading. And one neurologist suggested that it might be Rasmussen's encephalitis, an insanely rare illness that eats away at exactly one half of a brain. It never crosses over to the other half for some reason. They don't know what causes this. They don't know a cure for it. They don't know why it only consumes one half of a brain, but that's what it does. Someone sent the Ushers an article about another child suffering from the same condition. And here's what saved that other little girl's life. The doctors performed a radical miracle surgery where they remove one half of the child's brain. The complications for this one child went away. A child's brain is plastic, they say, plastic enough that the remaining half can learn to do the things that the absent half would have done. You and I are not so lucky. Cut out half of our brains today, we will not be able to recover from that, but a child's brain can rewire itself. But do you really trust a doctor to do that, to remove half of your kid's brain? The famous hotshot young neurosurgeon, John Hopkins, who had performed the surgery on the one child, saw little Beth and immediately recommended that he perform this operation on her too. That doctor, by the way, was named Benjamin Carson and would later become more famous for running for president in 2016. Ben Carson, probably your next Secretary of Housing and Urban Development. The process is mind-achingly precise. You cut one centimeter too far and you destroy good tissue, you can kill the patient. You leave a fraction of the disabled tissue in there and the operation is a failure. Just before the operation was to take place, Beth's mother, Kathy, calls the studios where Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood is taped and asked if they would send an autographed picture or something to Beth from the TV show. She described the life that Beth had led, the pain she had gone through, and anything from Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood would make her feel good. And the next day, the phone rings. Someone asked for Beth, which was rare because owing to her illness, she did not have many friends. And on the other end of the phone was Fred Rogers. She talked to him for a while, and her favorite characters, King Friday and Daniel Striped Tiger and more. But all did not go well in surgery. And Beth, after the surgery, slid into a coma. Fred Rogers called that next day to see how she was doing. And for the next 2 weeks, Mr. Rogers called every single day. And then one day he just showed up. He flew in from Pittsburgh and asked if he could visit her as she lay in a coma in bed. He pulled out of his little case some of her favorite characters, and with them he sang to her by her bedside. And she did not wake up. 2 months later, a neuro-ophthalmologist said there was so little brain activity, she would never operate beyond the level of a newborn. And then one night, as James Hamblin writes in If Our Bodies Could Talk, while her father was lying in a cot by her bed, she said, "Dad, my nose itches." Just like that, he bolted upright. He asked if she knew her name, and she said, "Beth Usher." He said, "Do you know where you live?" She said, "Storrs, Connecticut." He said, "Do you know what my name is?" Now she's getting ticked. She says, "You're Brian Usher." Her remaining half of her brain began to heal itself and rewire itself. Today, she is 37 years old. She walks with a limp, and she is a humor therapist. In 2015, she spoke at a national conference, taking the stage while singing as she walked to the podium, "If I Only Had a Brain," from The Wizard of Oz. The place went crazy, her father recalled. And that story goes on to remind us that humor has a place in medicine, and I guess hope does too. If Our Bodies Could Talk is by James Hamblin. And the book just is a page-turner like that. One, you know, jaw-dropping anecdote and one curious factoid after another. Did you follow the story this week of the Delta Airlines flight from Minneapolis-St. Paul to Los Angeles? Griff, Bob, did you guys hear about this?
I did.
The plane gets like 10 minutes out. They're somewhere over maybe North Dakota. And there's a couple in back. And, you know, the plane's still going up, up, up. And so you have to sit down, down, down. And the woman in the back won't. And so the pilot comes on and goes, "Lady, if you don't sit down, we're going to turn this thing around." And she still doesn't sit down. I guess she had to use the bathroom. And so they turn the flight around and then land. And the whole delay takes about 2.5 hours. People are so ticked and they took video of it. I would not be one of those people that would be taking video, I don't think. You know, but everybody's got their cell phones out and they're catching this magic moment. In fact, I interviewed one of the eyewitnesses who posted his video on YouTube. And 60 media outlets called him from around the world to hear the story about the lady who wouldn't sit down in the back of the plane. I guess she may have had to go to the bathroom. Maybe she was drunk. I don't know what her deal was. But then when the plane finally gets to its destination in Los Angeles, those people have missed connecting flights to Australia and Tahiti and everything else over the holidays. So it was a disaster. And you hear those stories once in a while. I mentioned this story on air, and I got this email from a friend of mine who said, "Hey, John, I was listening to the show, and I had an interesting situation this year. Listen to this. On a flight to Virginia, there was an Arab-looking man who got on the plane, no luggage, and he was taking pictures of the back of the plane. Everything. Cargo space, bathrooms, everything. We were supposed to take off first, but they told us that there would be a mechanical delay." Right. "But then the police come on board. Every one of them stayed up in the front of the plane with the pilots and the flight attendants, and they were all talking, talking, talking. An hour went by. Everybody's frustrated because they won't tell us anything. And finally, the police come back on board, and they arrest the man. He puts his arms up in the air, and he walks off the plane." More paperwork, and finally we take off, or so we thought. As we're going down the runway, two women in the back freak out, and we had to go back to the gate. They were afraid that maybe he left a bomb on board, so they get off. The captain comes on and said, okay, does anybody else want to get off the flight? 12 men and another woman all stand up and walk off the plane. So they all get off. The woman next to me, my friend writes, had been actually acting kind of strange the whole time. The captain comes back on and says, okay, now we're ready to go. We're going to take off. The woman jumps up. She doesn't grab her suitcase or anything and bolts off the plane. All of us missed our connecting flights. We finally left 2 hours later. It was very bizarre. Would you guys stay on that plane? If that happens, do you stay on the plane, or do you think, no, I'm going to get off the plane too? What would you do, Griff? What would you do, Bob?
I think I'd stay on the plane. So your friend stayed on the plane.
Yeah, she did. And it didn't crash, and everything went fine.
Yeah, well.
Yeah, I'd stay on. I mean, there's other ways of screening through all these, you know, things that I trust. So
that's so weird. I can understand, though, people feeling like just because you and the dogs didn't find it doesn't mean it's not there. But it's also kind of weird, too, because so much of, you know, your days, your life is going to be set on you making this flight to see family, for business, whatever. And to just act on an impulse, on a sort of gut feeling, is kind of a leap, isn't it? I mean, you don't have any other reason other than you got a queasy feeling in your stomach. Have you ever done that where you thought, I'm not going to get in that cab. I'm not going to get on that bus. I'm not going to get on that plane because it just doesn't feel right. Because whenever you decide to do that, the bus never crashes. It's fine. So I'm pretty convinced that you can almost always get on the plane.
I feel that way more and more every time I get on any plane. Just always like, what if I don't, though? Because it's just a can in the sky, and who knows what could happen.
I know. Planes are ridiculous when you think about it. You are
Yeah.
As high as Mount Everest is tall. You're sailing through thin air. And you're complaining about the movie. You know, it's just like, no, you should just be amazed that this miracle is happening.
Yeah, but, like, if the movie sucks, then I don't know. That's a real bummer.
What a luxury. So, but I think that's also a hard thing to explain to, say, your spouse, your kids, your workmate. You go, hey, guys, listen, you go ahead and get on that flight, but I'm going to just pull out here because I think it's going to crash and everyone's going to die. But you go ahead. You're good. You're good. You go ahead and get on the flight, but I'm not going to get on that. How do you even do that? It's 150. By the way, my number is 312-981-7200. This is WGN. After 2 o'clock, Brian Tallarico joins us again. I think he's terrific. I think he really knows his stuff. He's fun to talk to, and he's going to tell us what some of the best things are that he watched in 2016, TV and movies. That'll be a fun conversation. After 2 o'clock, our Vibe Score segment will be back. We did not do in this segment our Mincing Rascals podcast. Literally all of the Rascals were unavailable, so this is the first week in, gosh, over a year that we've sort of missed our cue. But we will be back in this slot next week with another edition of the Mincing Rascals, where Steve Bertrand and Eric Zorn and Kristen McQuarrie and often Scott Stantis from the Chicago Tribune join us in a roundtable discussion about state, local, and national news. By the way, just one other note, strange things that have happened to you while in flight. Griff, maybe I wasn't clear on what happened with that Delta flight that went out of Minneapolis to Los Angeles. They go 10 minutes out. And then they come back because the lady wanted to use the bathroom, or at least that's what she said. They said you can't stand up while we're going up. You got to sit down.
Yeah,
that's not a good enough explanation for you.
It's just so weird. She must have been just like hammered. I can't imagine,
either really drunk or maybe ill. I mean, let's face it. We all can imagine a time in our lives where you could not go to the bathroom, and maybe she was having that kind of a moment. I don't know.
That's true.
They should do, Griff? They should put seatbelts in the bathroom. Then you can go in there, close the door, sign a waiver, and say, okay, I'll be in here while we're accelerating, while we're going up or whatever you call that. But at least then you would allow that person to be sitting in. Either way, you're sitting in a seat.
It is a little degrading. It really brings you back to grade school. Like, no, I can use the bathroom when I want to. I'm an adult.
I know.
But I also understand why they kicked her off, believe me. It's just, maybe it's harder for some people to take. That's the weirdest thing. I tried to watch that video, but it was too painful.
It's a lot of unfortunate human interaction.
Yes, yeah.
Because people then, as they're walking the, so now the cops are come on and they're doing the kind of the perp walk. The two of them are walking down the aisle, nothing but hate and hostility and smartphones videotaping them as they come from the back of the plane all the way to the front. People are jeering them, and at one point the guy turns around and starts to slug somebody in one of the seats, and the police now jump him, throw him down on the aisle of the plane, and say, "You're going to jail. How much more do you want?" So then they handcuff him and walk him out of there. And I don't know what the explanation is other than she really had to pee. There's got to be more. Something else was going on there, right?
The guy, that's the guy what I'm saying. It's just so insufficient. Every time you say that, I'm like, no, no.
That's not what happened. It's not about going pee. It may have been about some pharmaceuticals or alcohol. I don't know. But the witness I talked to said that as they walked by him, the guy was now ashen-faced, and he interpreted that to mean, I can't believe we did this. You know, there comes a moment. Like, a lot of people who are jerks know how to be jerks, and they can believe they're that jerky because they're jerks. But every now and then you tip, and now you can't walk it back, and you're now going to jail, and you're on YouTube.
Well, it's also, and like, just the realization that this isn't just a room. Like, this is a plane. You really can't do that.
I know. That's it.
Don't
do
that. I
have zero tolerance for you not behaving.
Oh, yeah, of course.
When the airline attendant stands up before a flight and says, here are the instructions on how to use the life preserver and all that jazz, I always pay attention as a courtesy and because I think I've not been on this plane before. Maybe there's a new wrinkle in the flotation device. I don't know. I think I do that as much as a courtesy to the woman who's got to go or guy that's got to go through that silly dance up there for everybody.
Yeah, but sometimes they
give them my attention. What's the matter, Griff?
No, we all know this, but sometimes they relish that little performance.
Oh yeah,
you know the funny ones.
I do not want the funny ones. You Southwest Airlines people who have funny shtick up there.
Some of them are really good.
I want your shoes shined. I want you professional. I want to know that you know CPR. I just want to get from here to Los Angeles, and I don't need any extraordinary entertainment.
I don't know. It's equally professional. It's just like a little. I like to think it brightens up their day, and people do seem to enjoy it sometimes.
Yeah, I know they do.
If you got a good one, yeah. All right, that's fine.
No, because I think every minute that you're up there thinking, oh, I'll do this really good pun about flying or something, that's a moment you're not focusing on the safety of this aircraft.
That seems extreme to me. It's all a speech. They're just memorizing a speech. It could be a funny one or it could be a boring one.
When they were writing that funny speech, they should have been thinking about the safety of the aircraft.
And when they were eating dinner, recreating in some way, they should have been thinking about the safety of that aircraft.
When I get on plane and I look left, which is kind of like looking into the guts of an animal or a person, it's like, ooh, what are all those knobs and dials? What if something doesn't go right in there? I feel the same way about looking inside a human being as I do inside the cockpit of an airplane. But when I do look in there, and there's usually the captain is standing there and the flight attendant or the first lieutenant or whatever the other guy is that stands there and flies in case the first guy has a heart attack, those two guys, I always want them to have slightly gray hair. I want them to look like the man who models for JCPenney's catalogs. I want them to have a big smile. I want them to have a short
haircut. Sully Sullenberger.
Yes, I want them to just look boring, and I want their shoes shined, and I want them to look like the only thing they care about in the world is getting this craft safely
to
Los Angeles.
And if they don't look boring enough, you will cause a commotion in the back of the plane, screaming.
No.
And then you will fight a police officer until you have to turn the plane around.
But imagine if you look back there and the one guy's flicking the other guy's ear or they're playing paddle ball or I don't know what they're doing.
Sure, yeah.
But you go, no.
It's a pokey stop in here. Look.
If there's a pokey stop in the cockpit, I get off that plane. I want you folks focused on getting us to Los Angeles. All right. It's 2 o'clock. I'm sorry. That's just where I am now. Brian Tellerico joins us after the news. He'll talk about the best things that he's been watching on TV and in cinema for 2016. I know what you're thinking, Bob. You're thinking, John, have you had hydration therapy?
I'm thinking that.
Do you know what hydration therapy is?
Therapy involving, hydration, water.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
Boy, you didn't get your job doing news on WGN for nothing, sir.
Right.
I want to tell you what happened to me a little later on in this hour. Hydration therapy, they describe it as concierge hydration therapy, where they come to your house or business, they hook a needle up to your arm, and then they start just putting stuff in you. And it was amazing. And I don't. And actually, this weekend, you might need this service. So I'll give you a little heads up as to what that is and what it was like for me anyway before we get out of here at 3 o'clock. Right now, we say hello to Brian Tallarico. He's the editor at RogerEbert.com. You read him in Vulture, too, and you hear him on this radio station once in a while when we're lucky enough to hear his voice. Hey, Brian, it's Sean Williams. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. I'm hydrated, so why wouldn't
I? Yeah, I was going to say, I need that. I need. My wife's always telling me I don't drink enough water. I think I have dehydration therapy too often in my workplace.
Here's a little fun fact about that. They say that when you get hydrated intravenously, you are able to actually realize 5 times the benefit of drinking water. So say you drink water, and say you take a vitamin in that water, B12 or vitamin C or something, you would need to drink 5 liters of water. 5 liters of water you would need to drink in order to get the benefit of 10 minutes of this bag hooked up to your arm.
Wow. That's crazy. I'm looking forward to hearing more about it.
Cost you $99, by the way.
Oh, that's a little more expensive than a bottle of water.
Even 5 liters I could afford.
Right, exactly. Yes.
So how are you, sir? Long time no chat. You been good?
I know. It's been too long. I've been good. How about you?
Good. I was reading today about great TV. It seems like every year now, but because it's just so true now, it was such a great year in television and maybe cinema too, but we'll start with TV. And somebody who was writing about the year said that there were this year 455 scripted television options for you. So
I'm not surprised. I think most of those were on Netflix too, believe it or not.
Man. And so if somebody says, hey, have you seen Atlanta? And you go, what's that?
Yeah,
you don't have to
feel,
you know, although you should see Atlanta because that's awesome. But I mean, if you can't keep up, it's understandable, right?
Some have argued it's too much, that we're in an era of overload, quantity over quality, and people are just kind of turning away because they're overwhelmed by all of it.
Yeah.
The whole 500 channels aspect, and that maybe we should tighten this up, but of course they're not going to. But some have argued that they don't want to keep track of it. It's too much for them, so they just turn off from all of it.
Well, and there's also, I think, not only is it a quality and quantity issue, but I think the bar is raised pretty high. Shows that we now go, it's not so good, would have rocked the world in the 70s, you know?
Oh, completely, much later than that even, 80s or 90s, when we were still watching garbage sitcoms and legal and medical dramas, and that was about it. I mean, yeah, I see shows nowadays, and I'm like, 10 years ago, this would have been remarkable, but now it's not as much.
It's funny you mention that, because I'm amazed that the CSI franchise and some of those things, or just another medical drama, or one about a firehouse with EMTs.
Right.
I'm amazed
all the Chicago dramas.
Yeah, the Chicago dramas,
which never stop. You know what? I think they're comfort food to a certain extent. You know that the legal case is going to be solved by the end, or the patient is going to be cured or killed by the end. In other words, they're familiar. And there's something to be said for familiarity, especially in a dark year where people might want to just come home and see something that they know how it's going to end up. It's comfort food television is the way I always look at it.
I think that's apt, particularly since when you do consider, though, a lot of the shows that challenge us more now, they don't just wrap everything up each week in a nice little bundle. You'll go a whole season wondering, what was that? Or whatever happened, you know?
Yeah. I mean, some people work hard enough. I think right now the networks to pay most attention to are FX still. As you mentioned, Atlanta is incredible. I think the best show of the year was The Americans. I think The Americans is doing incredible stuff. And I think People vs. O.J. Simpson was remarkable, even though that was way back in January, almost a year old now. So FX is great. Of course, HBO had a good year, Westworld and Veep and The Night Of. I don't know if you watched that miniseries. I thought that was incredible. And
maybe I did.
I used that word too many times.
This is what I do now. And I go, I think I did. Which one was The Night Of?
Night Of was John Turturro as the lawyer and Riz Ahmed. It was a legal case in New York.
Yeah.
Wow. That was great.
Wow. Yeah. That was grueling. I'll tell you what, you are. That is a ride. That is like you do not know how that thing is going to go or what to think of what happened that night. Wow.
Yeah.
Terrible murder, and then it's who did it, and did the kid do it? And while the kid's in jail, while we're all trying to figure out, and the whole show's trying to figure out, did he do it or not, and is he going to be guilty or not? And John Turturro's his attorney, who's just a masterful, quirky character. We right. watch the kid while he's in jail get hard. And that's
basically
such
yeah.
a shame.
Yeah, well, it's a show more about process than whodunit. It's about the yeah. legal system and the criminal justice system. It's based on a BBC series that was called Criminal Justice. So that's kind of more what it's about. It, by the end, it's not really as important who did it. It's what happened to the people involved and how one event can change so many lives. Yeah. I thought that was great. I mean, really, the short-form miniseries, you look at the O.J. Simpson doc and you look at Night Of, had a really great year. And Westworld was kind of self-contained in its own weird way. But that's the weird thing about TV now, that every year there's this wave of new stuff, like Atlanta and Westworld and Night Of and O.J. Simpson. Like the old days, you watched St. Elsewhere for 15 years in a row or Hill Street Blues. Now every year it seems like there's a new model or a new car or something new you got to pay attention to. In
Ryan,
terms of
people,
repeats. Yeah,
for,
sorry,
for
go
people,
ahead.
Brian, who don't know Atlanta, because I've just seen that on the top of some people's lists and you've mentioned
yeah.
it. Tell us the story of Atlanta.
Atlanta is an FX half hour. I hesitate to call it a comedy, but we're so used to half hours or comedies and hour longs or dramas. But it is comedic generally. It's of Donald Glover, who was on Community. He's also a rapper under the name Childish Gambino, and he's done a lot of stand-up. He's a multi-talented guy. And he created the show kind of about hip-hop and youth in Atlanta in the 10s or whatever we're calling this decade. And it's just – it feels unlike anything else on television. It's got its own unique – minority-driven voice, which is rare and something we should embrace on TV. And it's got its own quirky sense of humor. It's really, really smart and I think ahead of a lot of other half-hour shows on TV. That was my number three. If people are interested, they can see how all these ranked on RogerEbert.com right now.
So. Yeah, let's just finish that. I felt the same way about Atlanta, that I hadn't
yeah.
seen something like that before. And while it was
right.
racially driven, it didn't feel real racial that way to
right.
me either. That is, those could have – I'll finish this sentence. It's not true, but those could have been white people. That is, they were just people. They were just people struggling with their issues and their music and all of that. And they
yeah.
happened to be – black in this case. I know it's...
But it's also not afraid of those issues, like the BET spoof episode and playing with how drugs and music are a part of that scene in a very racial sense down there as well. It's got both. I know what you're saying. It doesn't overplay its hand ever. It doesn't hit comedic beats or dramatic beats. It's so remarkably subtle in every
well,
way.
As a white guy watching that, I mean, to me, too many shows sort of segregate their audiences and their
yeah.
casts. And I
yeah.
think if you've not seen Atlanta... You do not have to be a person of color or into hip-hop music or that scene to appreciate it. You'll go, wow, this is really good.
I agree with that. It's smart for every kind of person. And the people
well, that's
who don't
number
even like
three
hip-hop.
On your list. Can you walk us up to two and one, or did you already mention them?
Two. I mentioned one, which is The Americans, which I think is spy drama, family drama of the highest caliber. I think it's the most complex and daring show on TV, especially this season, where they were unafraid of any sort of twist and turn, and the acting work just gets better every single year. And number two is probably even a lesser seen show called Rectify on the Sundance Channel, which just ended and is a drama about a young man who got out of prison, who was falsely incarcerated for years, trying to get back to his life. But it is so smart, so character-driven, and so, like I said, unexpected. I think that's the word I use the most in all these great shows like Atlanta and Rectify and Americans, things that with 400 and whatever number shows you mentioned, things that take a turn you're not expecting, but still feel genuine and character driven. I think that's what we're looking for.
Yeah. I lost my wife to that show this week.
Yeah,
just,
great.
You know, it's funny because like I'll get up in the morning and Brenda doesn't get up about the same time she normally does, and then she'll come stumbling
yeah, right.
and I go, "How many episodes?"
Right, it's incredible. And it ended this season. Most recent season was the last one, and it ended strong. And there's just something to be said for a great ending in movies or TVs or books when they stick the landing. Like I like to say, there's something so rewarding and nice about that.
Give me your number four, and then I'll ask you to talk about movies in a second too.
Four was Night Of. We'll just do the top 10 real quick because I think I've mentioned most of them. Four was Night Of. Five was People versus O.J. Simpson. Six, we haven't mentioned AMC at all. Six was Halt and Catch Fire, and seven was Better Call Saul, two great dramas from earlier in the year. Eight was Westworld. Nine was a comedy on HBO called Insecure, and 10 was Veep.
Do you know, do you watch, what is it? Griff, what's the name of the show? Because Griff kind of turned me on to this and is a big fan of it. Black Mirror, is that the show
I'm
thinking of?
Yeah, great. Yeah, I like Black Mirror very much. The first Netflix season was this year. It's a little inconsistent. Started as strong as ever. But yeah, I recommend Black Mirror to everybody, especially those of us who grew up like me on the Twilight Zone, which it is heavily inspired by.
Well, I've watched two episodes of that. Griff, the two I watched were White Christmas, and Griff, what's the other one that I saw?
The Entire History of You.
That's great. The Entire History of You is great.
If you only watched two episodes, watch that. It's amazing.
Entire History of You is one of my top two. Then the first one of season two, what's that called, Griff? Do you remember?
Be Right Back?
Be Right Back. Be Right Back is a masterpiece. I actually think that's the best. An Entire History of You is right after that. So, and then watch Nosedive, which is the first one of this season, which is fantastic.
So these are series of shows, if you will, that are thematically connected, but really independently produced, it feels like. But they all sort of have a Twilight Zone feel, right?
Right. Futuristic, based largely on a reliance on technology, most of them. And some of them, like White Christmas, is as long as a feature film.
Oh, my
some
God.
Of them are 90 minutes.
Griff says, let's watch this. I said, okay, we'll watch that. So we're watching that. Thinking, this thing won't end. It was really long for a TV show.
They did another one this season that was over 90 minutes, the last one. So,
hey, let's pause here. Brian Tallarico is on the phone line. You can read all of his stuff at RogerEbert.com, where he's the editor. You've read him at Vulture before, too. And I just wanted to bounce or get some movie ideas off of you, Brian. Let's pause here and come back in a minute on WGN. We're talking to Brian Tallarico. You can read him where he is the editor at RogerEbert.com. I keep saying you're on Vulture. Are you regularly in Vulture? Do I read you there all the time, Brian?
It's assignment-based, so I do some freelance stuff, but I also have regular gigs recapping certain shows. So I'll be doing, for example, Billions recaps when it comes back in February. That's the next thing I know for sure.
Was Billions good?
No. Yeah, it was, actually. I mean, Paul Giamatti and Damian Lewis are hard to ignore and have too much trouble with, and I actually think I have high hopes for the second season. I think it had some issues to work around in the first season, but I think it will. That's my hope.
We're looking at your top 10 movies for 2016. Can I walk you backwards on this?
Is this the sites or mine specifically?
Oh, no kidding. Well, it says, I'm reading Brian's top movies of 2016. It starts with I, Daniel Blake. Is that you?
No, it's the site. What we did for the site was we took all our regular writers and compiled all of our lists. But this is great. I'd rather do the sites than my own. So I, Daniel Blake, which is a very good drama that'll come out, I think, at Century or Music Box later in January.
Give me a headline on that. What's that all about, I guess?
It's red tape in the welfare system in England. It's by Ken Loach, who's a very famous kind of blue-collar filmmaker. He's always talking about the rights of the disenfranchised and the poor. And it's about a guy named Daniel Blake who basically just gets the runaround from everyone and the system that basically screws him over. It's a good drama.
I hope at the end he has a dramatic blow-up scene where he gives
a couple.
Does he really? Love and Friendship is number 9 on your group's list here.
Yep, that's Whit Stillman's Jane Austen adaptation. It's really clever and funny. If you haven't seen it, like, kind of missed a lot of people. It's on DVD now. Kate Beckinsale and Chloe Sevigny. It's a fun Pride and Prejudice, Emma type thing. It's really fun.
Yeah. Friends of mine saw it and loved it. Other friends of mine saw that and hated it.
That kind of period comedy can be, you got to be in the right mood. You know what I mean?
So. I think, when they got out of there, they described the movie to us. And I said, that's what that's about. What did you think you were going?
Exactly.
That's what that movie is.
It's
sort of like Manchester by the Sea. If you go, wow, that was a downer. I'm thinking, that's on you now. Because Camera Person? Is that the story of everybody in the world now or what?
No, it's a great movie. It's about a documentarian. She's actually been a camera documentarian for, like, the camera holder, a camera operator on a lot of major films, including Fahrenheit 9/11 and Citizen 4. And she, instead of just making, like, a biographical documentary about her life, she assembles footage from, like, places she's been, and it kind of takes on an autobiographical tone. It's hard to explain, but it's really mesmerizing to watch, and that was on my top 10 as well. It's a fantastic film.
So it is kind of a personal documentary, huh?
Yeah, sort of. But it's almost a fluid consciousness type thing. Like, she'll show footage of people praying in overseas or something, and then show footage of her childhood that is religious. You know what I mean? It's kind of like a train of thought, and it becomes really mesmerizing. And the idea of how we film things and how we take things in and how we process memory, it's really, really great. And I recommend that to anyone who can track it down. I think it's DVD in February, if I'm not mistaken. So.
I'll just walk you through the list real quick here because we're going to run out of time. Number 7
we're gonna
is
run
13th.
Out of time.
Tony Erdman is number 6. 5 is Ellie. And number 4, Manchester by the Sea. No, pardon me, L. Number 4 is Manchester by the Sea. Anything you want to throw out there about Manchester by the Sea?
I think it's great. It was my number 2, actually. I think the performances are phenomenal, and I think not enough has been made about its wonderful sense of place. Water and hockey and crucifixes on the wall and alcohol. It's got this really wonderful lived-in sensibility about it that I think is fantastic.
That's a really interesting observation. I mentioned to my wife after we saw it, I said, you really got a sense that they really filmed it there. Boy, I hope they did.
Right.
Did they really film it there?
Yeah. But it's more than just that. It's all the crucifixes on the wall and hockey on the TV. You know what I mean? It's like that it's really in – that this is a part of these people's lives, and then it adds grief to that. That's what I think it's about. I think it's about grief becoming a part of your life. Not to spoil anything, but it's got a lead character who's had something so horrible happen that he's never going to, quote-unquote, get over it. But it's about learning to live with that kind of horrible grief. I think it's a great movie.
And the painful decisions you have to make and how you're going to do that along the way. La La Land is number 3 on the group's list. Was that in your top 5, La La Land?
It was my number 11. I think it's very good. Here's a little hint to all listeners. It's going to win Best Picture quite easily. So anyone who wants to place money on the Oscars, I think it's going to win it in a walk. It's a Hollywood musical, and they love Hollywood. Think of The Artist and Argo. The Academy loves movies that pat themselves on the back a little bit, and La La Land is that movie for this year. So
I wonder, when's the last time a Hollywood musical – when's the last time a musical won Best Picture?
Chicago, not that long ago, 14 years ago.
Okay. That sounds like a long time ago to me. I mean, put it this way, there aren't that – we don't make this kind of movie that often, right?
We don't make this kind of movie ever because usually they're based on plays, at least not in my lifetime. Like even Chicago and Les Mis, they're usually from source material. An original musical is very rare, incredibly rare.
And the songs are good in the movie, I think.
Yeah, too. I think so too.
Patterson is number 2 on your group's list. What's that?
That was my number 3. I think it's fantastic. It's Jim Jarmusch's latest film. It's basically about poetry, which makes it sound horrible, I know. But it's about a bus driver who writes poems. And it's as simple as that. And it's about seeing poetry in life and little beautiful moments. And I think it's phenomenal. I recommend it to everybody. It's one of my favorite movies of the year.
And finally, Moonlight. What do you know about that?
That's my number 1 as well. I think it's the most daring and ambitious film of the year. And really, I know this isn't great for radio, but the less you know about it, the better. Just go see it. I think it's a really beautiful, important, essential was the word I used in my review film.
Wow. Okay. I'm intrigued. Not a funny movie, I take it.
No. No.
Essential and funny and slapstick don't normally go together. So
it was a rough year for comedy, to be honest. There weren't a lot of good ones.
I wonder if the people that make TV shows or movies are able to sort of work quickly enough to react to the sort of zeitgeist of the country, you know, at that time. So if America right now is just uncertain, can somebody crank out a sitcom or a movie that sort of fixes that or, you know, helps us through that?
TV absolutely can, because TV, especially a comedy, the turnaround process is relatively quick. And even for drama, by spring, you'll start to see it. I've seen the season premiere of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, which premieres next week on FX, and they reference Trump. But they reference Trump winning. So that shows you how quickly that show turns around. They must have filmed it after the election. Yeah.
And that must be tempting for them, too, because that's the kind of show where they could just rip on Trump, but I don't think that would be a smart play either. So I think that's a tricky
proposition. There's
going to
be some of that. Yeah. Yeah, there's going to be some of that fine line walking. I think it'll be interesting to see how independent film reflects the zeitgeist and some people who feel disenfranchised by the current administration. So that should be interesting, but that'll take longer. Usually film doesn't reflect the reality we're in for at least a year or two, in my opinion. TV's quick.
It might take a while before we really know what that reality is, too.
Yeah,
so
I agree.
We shall see. Hey, Brian, what a pleasure. Everybody go to RogerEbert.com, where you are the editor, and thanks for coming on with us again today.
Anytime, John. You have a good new year.
Brian Tallarico talking TV and movies with us. All right, we'll talk news with you. That's right around the corner on WGN.
The old hootie owl, hootie hoos to the dove. Tammy, Tammy, Tammy's in love. Does my lover feel what I feel when he comes?
I watched that video for the first time, maybe ever, this week. It's adorable. What a sweet song. What a nice tribute. We're doing our Vibe Score segment now. Vibe Score, it's an app you can get for free. You got a smartphone. Get on your smartphone the app called Vibe Score. It was developed by my cousin Tom Hegberg and me. And we'll feed you stories that you tell us are interesting to you. And then we ask you to score it at the end. What's your vibe? So, Griff, you're starting us out with what on that?
Well, Debbie Reynolds died last week at the age of 84. It's tragic, just a day after her daughter, Carrie Fisher, died. We all know.
Can you die of a broken heart?
Yeah, it was so sad. And that was her classic number one hit song from, I think, 1957, Tammy.
That sounds about right.
From the film Tammy and the Bachelor. And we asked, what's your score for the song? And that is, I was just happy to have a reason to put it up, although sad with the tragedy. But I love that song. It's one of my favorite songs.
Are you kidding me?
No, it really is. I absolutely love it.
I know that song. Only when you play it, I go, oh, yeah, that song, Tammy. I don't know anything about that song.
Well, it was a huge hit back in the day, but I was introduced to it like a few years ago, and I'd never heard it. Or actually, it's in The Big Lebowski, but I didn't. It's very minor in that movie. You can't really tell. Yeah, no, I love it. I give it 100.
I know. Easy. It feels wrong to not give it a good score, but 1 to 100, you get to rate that song Tammy and at least reflect on them that way. It's a nice video.
I guess it's just worth posting. The voting on that is a little... It's like,
sorry, lady, I don't like your song. It's not the right day for that.
No, but, maybe not. And I was thinking about maybe in the movies category we'll see something from Singing in the Rain, because that's her most iconic performance by far.
Yeah, go watch that again. I saw some video from that this week, and the artistry, athleticism, music, that movie's got it all, doesn't it?
Well, it's a perfect time to see it after you see La La Land, see what that movie's all about.
I was thinking about that, because I think one fair criticism of La La Land is if you hold it up to Gene Kelly or Fred Astaire or Ginger Rogers or some of those people who were singing and dancing back in the day, these people can't hold a candle to that. It's a great movie, but it's
we don't produce stars that way anymore, you know what I mean? That are so multi-talented. Singing and dancing and acting and just being funny or whatever.
And I think what you see, too, because I thought about this when I watched White Christmas, is then you'll say, okay, well, let's go get the best singer, the best dancer, or the best singer-dancer, but then they're not a good actress.
Right, yeah.
And I think back in the day, they were more willing to compromise on, were you pretty enough, handsome enough, or a good enough actor or actress, because doggone it, they could dance or sing. You know?
I've heard people especially complain about Ryan Gosling singing in La La Land, and it didn't bother me at all, really. I did notice that he's not the best singer, but it didn't bother me that much. But somebody said maybe like Justin Timberlake could have pulled that off, because he's a good actor. He's not as good actor as Ryan Gosling is by a long shot, but he's a good actor.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And obviously he can sing and dance, and I thought that there might be something to that. But
maybe Justin Bieber could have done it, too. Anybody named...
Justin would be good. I don't think Justin Bieber could have done it. Ryan Gosling was a Mouseketeer or whatever.
His voice was described in one of the reviews I read, and I thought it was code, but they described it as a moonbeam. And I thought, that sounds good, but it also isn't, wow, can this guy sing? It's something else. And it's not bad, but it's not great singing. It's a moonbeam.
It worked. It was good. Yeah. In other movies news, we gave everybody a chance to see it and then asked what you thought of Rogue One, the Star Wars story.
Yeah.
It had fans freaking out. Some people loved it. Some people hated it.
Yeah, I haven't seen it, so I guess I should abstain. You haven't seen it. Have you seen it?
I saw it.
Okay, so, and you're not a Star Wars junkie, are you?
No, I like it, but it's really never been my thing, which
I think... But I think that's a good way to come at this movie.
Well, I agree, because, like, you hear people that are like, it's the best Star Wars in years, or what, like, top three Star Wars movies, and then some people are like, is a betrayal of everything that they thought Star Wars was supposed to be. It's like, oh, God, I don't know. And they both claim to be huge Star Wars fans. So it's like, what is the predominating feeling on this movie? So, yeah, I went in not knowing what to expect at all. And it turns out it's pretty good. It's
1 to 100, what do you give it?
I give it a 72.
72? Wow, think, that sounds tepid.
It is tepid a little bit, but it's good. It's like it's a good blockbuster. It's no more, no less. The action, really, the thing about this one is that the action is great. It's lucid and like the scale, you just feel all the action really well.
Yeah.
Well, the characters are thin. The story does not matter, but that's okay. It's a big dumb blockbuster. Like that's how I felt about it.
It's a big dumb blockbuster.
But
if you feel
how strongly,
how dare you betray the Shakespearean overtones and great?
Oh
blah,
yeah, that
blah,
was
blah,
the
blah, blah,
New Yorker review we read. Yeah. If you have a strong feeling one way or the other about this, I think that's suspicious. You're probably too in your feelings about Star Wars.
A buddy of mine is that guy. He has everything but the toys, and he may, but he just doesn't show them to me. So I said, okay, Dan, what did you think of Rogue One? And he just looked down and he goes, no, it was. I go, what? So I asked him to rate it on a scale of 1 to 23 Jujubes. He goes, maybe a 13. And I said, why? And he knew he needed to have that answer ready. What's your elevator why speech? And here's his reason.
Okay.
There's no opening scroll. Credits don't come out of the screen like that.
But it's not a chapter in the Star Wars saga. Now I start to sound like a Star Wars fan. It's a Star Wars story. It's an offshoot. So I understand the nixing of the scroll.
I do too, but I mean,
but
I
he doesn't.
You're making your own point here. If that's a point for you, right, then we can't even have a conversation now. So, because to me, and I don't mean any disrespect, but all Star Wars movies are, they get in a spaceship, there's some furry creatures and some hip people, and they fly around, and then they shoot their lasers. And then there's a backstory about whose son is whose mom, and that matters to everybody but me. I just go watch the spaceships and the laser stuff.
Well, and now I feel a little disrespectful. We just talked about Carrie Fisher dying, and seeing the outpour of support from fans. And, I mean, she was not just Princess Leia. She had a long career that was fascinating that I learned so much more about since she passed as a script doctor.
More than just an actress,
and
too,
a writer,
obviously.
And
yeah.
Obviously an amazing writer, but a script doctor, too. She punched up scripts sort of behind the scenes without a lot of credit. A lot of people didn't know that she did that. But those movies mean so much to people. You have to respect it. And so the passing of her was a huge deal to everyone, but especially to fans. So I understand. I get it. I have things that I am a fan of that I couldn't really, you know,
justify to somebody.
Logically
who
argue.
Get it.
Yeah, no, of course. We all have those things, but I think Star Wars is one of those.
Give me another one. What else are we vibing on?
How about Chicago Sports in his year end column? Tribune columnist Eric Zorn, also Mincing Rascal, asked if the Cubs will repeat as World Series champs. What do you think?
92, yes. You have no reason to say anything other than 90-something. What is your certainty that the Cubs will be back in the World Series? It's got to be 91, 92.
And you think they'll win?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Why wouldn't you?
I don't know.
Listen to me. Who stirred my bonnet here? But, yeah. I mean, it's just funny to me, the sport. Okay. Sports guys who absolutely know what's going to happen. Had the Golden State Warriors winning the NBA championship or blah, blah, blah. So you can never really know. But based on what you do know now, why would you vote against the Cubs? 92.
Sure, yeah. I haven't been keeping up enough with this offseason. I thought maybe there's some reason to, I don't know, be worried. But no, they're going to be great.
Well, they're going to be great. They're going to win it all. Okay, 100. Give me another one.
100.
100. 100.
I'm feeling good. Hundreds today. In the books category, I posted The Life-Changing Magic of Tidying Up by Marie Kondo.
Sure.
Not a new book, but one of the best-selling books of the year.
It's a great book. And
did
it's
you
a
read
good
it?
System. I didn't read it, but we do it. Why are you laughing?
Because it's funny when you say it's a great book. No, of course I haven't read it. You're so far beyond that, you don't even know why that's funny.
I know. Isn't that sad? I can review movies and books never having cracked them.
Oh, it's an amazing skill. I'm so impressed.
I'm going to give that book an 89. Griff,
well, this one I actually understand a little bit because I'm sure there's more to be gained by actually reading it, as is usually the case. However, you do understand some basic form of the philosophy that she's peddling, which is like to get rid of your stuff.
Well, my wife has bought the book and has practiced it in my home.
She
and
has.
I have adopted some of those traits, and it really works. I'm not going to read the book, though.
Do you pick up things and ask if it brings you joy?
Does it bring you joy? That's the thing. I'll hold up a shirt to Brenda now, and I'll go, doesn't bring me joy. Out it goes. And that little thing is amazingly liberating. I'm telling you, it works.
Okay. All right, in the WhatsApp category, we posted just New Year's Eve. A lot of people think it's overrated. It can be expensive, loud, crowded, a hassle to get around.
Yeah.
Do you agree?
I want to go to New Year's Eve parties. People don't invite me to them.
Oh.
I'm going to give the New Year's Eve party an 89. I'm back at, I'm kind of high. People always go, oh, it's an amateur night. I hate it. You want to go to the party, you just didn't get invited. I think it's an 89.
I'd go lower. I'm more of on the other side. I go like 40.
By the way, I just posted on VibeScore, Griff. You don't have this, but I did it just during the last break. Here's another thing to vibe on. 2016, the year. You got the Cubs winning the World Series. You've got Donald Trump winning the election. Those may be two great things for you, or maybe that's the yin and the yang of it. I don't know. You've got the Dow at an all-time high. You know, there's just you. What? When I say 2016, boom. What's your gut tell you? 1 to 100, and sometimes that depends on when. You know, some days are better than others. But how will you remember 2016? I think the media is showing its liberal bias because everybody's painting it as what a disastrous, crazy, nutty, awful, terrible year. And some people voted for Donald Trump and are Cubs fans, and they don't see it that way, although they must know it was at least a wild ride. But I'm going to give 2016... I threw an election party. I'm still recovering from emotionally.
Can you at least say, I mean, I think the election did color most of the year for a lot of us Americans.
The whole campaign. I mean, it was all year.
No matter what side you were on, it was a tough one.
Yeah.
It was tough for everybody. Like, it was painful. Like, not the outcome, just the process was a lot.
Fair enough.
It was
a lot. Even if you voted for Donald Trump, you've got to admit there were parts of that that weren't enjoyable, right?
Yeah.
Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. I think on both sides... Both sides found each candidate so objectionable. It was so painful to watch whatever was going on.
Well, are you assuaged at all by the fact that the Cubs won the World Series and, I don't know, some good things happened in your life, too? Does it balance it out?
Well, what's your score?
I know. So now you got to own this calculus that you're inventing here, John. I'm going to give 2016... a 62. It was not a great year for me. I'm sorry.
That's so low for you. I think a lot of people would see that as a very high score.
Oh, yeah. I would. I live in the upper 70s and middle 80s, so a 62 is a concession speech on my behalf.
Sorry,
where are you
that.
On this, Griff? What was your 2016?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe the same. It's hard to know how to think. That's too big. I don't have a way in.
Yeah, well, that's what we do. That's VibeScore. We feed you topics or simple concepts. We ask you to score them, and then everybody's score is averaged in so we can see how the group does. All right, Mr. Griff, thank you for that. It's a 2:52. The boys from the beat will say hi to us in a minute. We'll talk a little sports and get ready for them to do a lot of sports on WGN. Thank you, Mr. C. This is John Williams. We're getting ready for the boys from the beat to talk a little sports with you. Mark Carmen and Harry Tynowitz are getting ready to do that. Hi, guys. How are you?
Good afternoon, John. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, John. La Shana Tova.
What was that last part?
La Shana Tova.
What does that mean?
That's your Hebrew. Happy
La Shana Tova. Oh,
right.
Okay.
It means you're blessed, John.
Oh, how nice. Well, what a nice thing of you to say, Harry.
Oh, it's my pleasure, but it's true.
By the way, we're pretty excited up here in Minnesota about this hockey game later on today. You got Minnesota Wild, 12 in a row, and the Columbus Blue Jackets, I think it is.
It's exactly who.
Who have won 13 or 14 in a row.
So it's 14 smackers.
It's the greatest combination in the history of the NHL. It's the greatest combination of combined wins meeting each other.
Yeah, two win streaks, never before seven. And now you've got two that are in double digits. One of them will have another win. And the funny thing is, we look over our shoulders, we're still in second place. As good as the Minnesota Wild have been playing, we're still one point behind the Blackhawks.
61-60. I don't know if the alumni game, which is going on right now, could possibly count in the standings. Reed Simpson just scored. The Hawks are down 5-4, John.
That's in St. Louis, right?
It is. It is.
John, my favorite, you know, the Hawks took out the Wild like 3 years in a row from the playoffs. And in the third year, somebody got a hold of the Minnesota Wild Wikipedia page. And where it says owner, they put Patrick Kane.
That's very good. Speaking of Chicago meets Minnesota, so how are you guys handicapping the Bears-Vikings game?
It's a huge game, John. Absolutely enormous.
Better not lose the draft pick. We could pick third.
Yeah, really. It's too bad. It's a beautiful stadium. It'd be a good place to see a game, but who wants to go see those two teams play, you know?
Speaking of huge disappointments in 2016, and by the way, I think I would come out on the 96% 2016 was great in your poll, John.
Oh, good. I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah, but the Minnesota Vikings were 5-0. Yeah. People were talking Vikings Super Bowl.
Oh, yeah. We thought we were going to run the table. There was actually a conversation where then you go, well, we'll beat the Bears twice. And they thought, we're going to win all the games. We're going to go undefeated.
And then to not make the playoffs, and then your coach, who was well-respected, now is a disaster. It's tough times up there in Minnesota. Got to go get a Juicy Lucy at Matt's, and everything will be all right.
Touche, but one last note about the Vikings, though. The quarterback is on the verge of having the most efficient season in the history of the NFL. He completes like 72% of his passes or something like that. He's not real exciting, but he never throws it away. And you will not lose the game because of our quarterback. You'll lose it for other reasons.
I like Sam Bradford. So what are you going to do next year when you have two very talented quarterbacks? Are you going to have Bradford or Teddy Roosevelt?
Yeah. What do you do when your starter marquee, like, this is our guy, we love him and he's doing great, and then he goes down for a whole season? Do you hold this slot or do you make him earn it back, Harry? What do you do with that?
I think they got to have an open competition. I mean, you're not supposed to lose your job to injury, but it happens all the time. And I think that you'd be hurt. You'd be punishing the players on the Vikings to just come back and say Teddy Bridgewater is the quarterback, because Sam Bradford has had some strong games this year.
With all due respect, I think the major mantra, one of my resolutions in 2017, John, is got to take care of number one. And right now, with the amount of problems that we have on the Chicago Bears, the last thing we should be doing is spending time on fixing the Vikings. We got to take care of our own.
Right. Yeah, thank you for that. So what are you guys talking about today? You going to start with that, or what are you going to lead off with?
We do have some Bears. We were delving into the draft, the 2 years of drafts of Ryan Pace. We're going to break that down at some point. But little New Year's-y sports resolution starting the show here, and more connection, John. It's going to be emotional to start the program.
Well, I would expect nothing less from you two guys.
And John, on the as the Blackhawks alumni play the Blues alumni, and with the Hawks alumni playing, the Hawks playing the Blues on Monday. That game, of course, right here on Radio 720 WGN. I'm going to ask Mr. NBA over here why the NBA doesn't do an outdoor game.
That'd be kind of fun, I think. Don't the college teams play a game on the deck of an aircraft carrier?
That happened.
They do.
That happened. We could do this. The NBA could. Maybe they will.
And it would count, or is that an exhibition
game? No. In season, the game counts.
Why do you want that, Harry?
Because because every other NBA game, you can flip it on with 4 minutes and 40 seconds to go, and that's all you need to watch. This would be a very wonderful treat.
You're better than
that. Let's get him a striped ball, too. You know, like the what was it? Not the ABA. Was it the ABA? Is that what it was?
That had
the striped ball?
ABA. Right.
I got to get out of your way, guys. You're off to a good start. We'll be listening. Thank you, fellas.
Thanks, John.
He jinxed us.
Harry Tynowitz and Mark Harmon, and I'm John Williams. By the way, thank you, Krista Flores, our engineer today. Griffin Filipich produces this show. I'm John Williams, and I'm looking forward to talking to you next year. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com.